Before we start this episode of CFD's Podcast for Good, let's give a little shout out to our presenting sponsor, WSECU. WSECU has been a part of the community since 1957 and has been supporting the CFD in a big way since 2011. Thanks to them, we were able to bring you spectacular events and promotions like the Masquerade Ball, Golf for Veterans Tournament, and our incredible First Week to Give, which has been responsible for raising tens of thousands of dollars in donations to charities throughout our community. For more on how WSECU serves charities throughout our community, visit www.wsecu.org/community. And of course, visit our website to find out more about our incredible partnership with WSECU. And now, here's the show. So, my kids are into Scooby-Doo at the moment.
Make sure.
Yeah.
Scrappy-Doo.
I don't want Scrappy-Doo.
Don't ever.
I
think he's don't introduce them to him. Yeah. There's no reason for Scrappy-Doo's existence.
I have a question about Scooby-Doo and Shaggy specifically. So, like, Fred and Velma and Daphne clearly enjoy getting into mischief and mysteries.
But Scooby and Shaggy are scared and they're not into it.
Why are they still friends with these people?
I know. You guys need a new friend group.
Yeah, you do need a new friend group. If I had friends who were like, hey, let's go do this, and they got all excited about like some serial killer or something, I probably would stop being friends with them.
See, and that's something too. Like, it looks like they're always on their way to something. Like, maybe they're on their way to a picnic or a basketball game or something.
Yeah.
Like, they're going to meet up with the Globetrotters.
Yeah.
But then they get sidetracked by, you know, an old man dressed as a ghost scaring people.
That's the most active group of people.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what? You should cut that out.
Yeah, especially if your friends are scared every single time
they go outside. Every time. You people are the worst friends to Scooby and Shaggy.
Yeah, and clearly all they're after are snacks.
They want to eat.
Yeah.
They like snacks.
Who doesn't?
Also, does Shaggy eat Scooby snacks?
I would imagine so.
That's gross.
Yeah.
Shag.
But what are Scooby snacks? I mean, they do kind of look like dog food, right?
Yeah.
But what are they? You don't know.
And we just have completely glossed over the fact that, like, Shaggy's a stoner.
Yeah.
So
is Scooby. I mean,
he's just a stoner dog.
Yeah, stoner dog. Yeah.
It was made in like the 60s or 70s. Yeah. Clearly, Shaggy's a stoner.
Because you've got your three humans who are very like well dressed or, you know, preppy kind of thing or out there doing good things for the world. And then stoner kid over here in his t-shirt. And
three squares and two drug addicts.
Yep.
Run around, solve a mystery.
Yeah, explain a TV plot badly.
There you go. Right? All right, ladies and gentlemen, listen up. This is season 2, episode 4. Today we are highlighting organizations and how volunteers actually impact them. So this is kind of a weird, like, we're going like meta with this. We're talking to two organizations, but we're not talking to them solely about their missions. We're talking about volunteers and how they help. And while we're doing that, we're also talking about volunteers in the community.
You got really excited about that.
I did. I don't know why. So my name is Philip Kerrigan. I am the program manager of the Combined Fund Drive. And this is, as always,
Heather Lucas, the fiscal and policy coordinator for the Combined Fund Drive.
You almost made it all the way to episode 5.
Yeah, almost. I couldn't really remember the policy part for a second. What do I do?
Yeah. So we sat down and we talked to two organizations. The first one was Grave Concerns Association. We sat down with the chairperson, Laurel Lemke. And we sat down with Seroptimus International of Olympia. We sat down with Karen Hall, who's the fundraising director, and Gwen Morris, who is the previous president, last year's president of Seroptimus. And what I liked about this particular podcast is that these two organizations seemingly have nothing in common with each other.
True.
Right?
Yeah.
Their only real thing that brings them together is the thing that brings almost every single charity together, which is they are volunteer run.
Yeah.
Right? And so it was kind of cool to talk to them about the different ways their volunteers actually impact their operations. Kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's kind of what we're doing with this podcast. We're going to talk to these two organizations. We talked to them about the strength of volunteers for them independently.
Yeah.
But I think it's important to keep in mind that these two organizations are merely a tiny picture of how much volunteers actually impact nonprofits throughout the community.
Absolutely. You know, we are not entirely volunteer run, but we're pretty much volunteer run. Yeah.
We're pretty close.
We got those four people who are actually staff members. But beyond that, I mean, like, we wouldn't be able to succeed at all without volunteers.
No way. I mean, we have close to 1,500 different volunteers everywhere. I would say that if you included all of the incredible people who work at the University of Washington and other college campuses, you're probably talking more in the 2,000 to 2,500 range.
Well, yeah, and then you look at people who will host a fundraiser for their agency, their school, and then there's always those people who are like, oh, did you need help today? I'm here to help you. I'm here to volunteer for your event today.
Yeah, yeah. I'm always really, really, it's very cool and very humbling to see people like want to do the events that we put on because a lot of times we do the events and we think we're just doing them and it's like in a vacuum and you know and we actually have people who say I want to be a part of this event the masquerade ball,
they
want to
come back,
they want to come back all the time.
So
we save a ton of money using volunteers for our events as well. In fact, the Independent Sector, which is this very cool website, tracked the tangible dollar amount that a charity saves state by state using a volunteer over paid staff, and right now it's over $30 here in Washington State.
Yeah, the average they say for statewide for last year was $24.14.
Yeah, that's insane.
So I took that number and multiplied it by all the hours logged through the CFD volunteer tracker.
Yes.
So 21,480 hours of volunteer time were logged last year by CFD volunteers and donors. And that is $518,000.
There you go.
That's $500,000.
Yeah.
That charities saved.
The charities did not have to.
They had volunteers.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
So we're going to dive into the podcast with these two, Laurel and Karen and Gwen. We're going to talk about that. But first, as usual, you are going to hit me with a question of the pod.
Absolutely. So because we are volunteer run and we have a big sector of our program is charities. Hey, imagine that.
Yeah.
So we get to volunteer.
Yes.
What is the weirdest thing you've done at a volunteer gig?
It took me 2 seconds to figure out this answer.
Yeah.
And you were there.
Was I?
Yes.
Okay.
So I want to say it was 5 years ago now.
Does it have anything to do with the parking lot?
Yes.
Oh, that was the one that I was going to go with too.
Oh, really? Yeah. So I believe it was the Squaxin Canoe.
Yeah, it was the journey. Like that, right? Yeah.
It's a very, very cool thing that the Squaxin Indian tribe does where it's a very historic journey that they go from. What island do they come from?
I don't know. I think that it changes every year, and I know that different tribes host.
Yeah, and then they.
And we were there when Squaxin Island.
This particular one, they ended up, their final destination was at the Port of Olympia.
Yeah.
And so the Port of Olympia volunteered some of its employees to help. And they, through contacts that we had there, offered the CFD an opportunity to volunteer at this particular event. We jumped on it. Some people got glamorous jobs like working the crowd and those sort of things. And I got the job of parking cars in the parking lot.
Yep.
The problem was that apparently I was so awful at this particular job that about an hour in or 2 hours in when new help came, I was instantly fired from the job of parking cars. We had this awesome guy. Remember, what was his name? Don?
Yeah.
Don. He was hilarious. He was like something straight out of a movie. He like pulls us all aside and says, everybody, the key is to remember to remain calm and just remember we're going to roll with the punches and we're going to be flexible. We're going to be flexible.
Yeah.
And then he ended up being the least flexible human
of all time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He couldn't figure out what was going on. He was perpetually stressed. He had this one guy across the street, Jim, who paid no attention to anything Don was saying. So Don would get on the radio and be like, Don to Jim. And Jim wouldn't answer. Don to Jim. Don to Jim!
Don to Jim, no!
He'd be running across the parking lot.
I also love, though, too, like the parking of the cars. You weren't actually physically parking the cars.
No,
the
I mean, it wasn't like I was just a valet.
Yeah, exactly. They were just pulling in next to a car that had just parked. Yes. So it wasn't like it was rocket science or anything.
And let me put this. I want to say a couple of things in my defense.
Okay.
the first is there were no painted lines for parking.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it was kind of like a weird rocky field.
Yeah, so it was hodgepodge or whatever. Second of all, it was gravel.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like, you know, I mean, it wasn't anything official. Mm-hmm. And I got literally no instructions. So when they were pulling it, I was like, yeah, that seems good. Yeah. Right. And then I noticed that I was doing something wrong because I got a couple of notes, right? Like people were like, you know, actually it might be better if you parked them this way. And I was like, oh, okay. And they kept coming back and doing
that. Yeah.
And then eventually I was just full on
fired
from that particular position. So that's probably the weirdest volunteering I've ever done.
You know, I don't remember actually having to park the cars. I was in the parking lot, and I kind of remember just being like, "So, what do you want me to do?"
Yeah.
What am I? Where?
I really feel like we were extra volunteers. We were just like backfill.
Yeah, I kind of remember standing there and looking around and just being like, "Okay, so do you need me help? What would you like me to do?" Oh, well, just stay here, and we'll. Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
The only real awesome thing that bore out was that we got this spectacular dinner at Little Creek Casino because the Squaxin Indian Tribe was hosting it.
Yeah.
But that was it. I mean, I didn't know I sucked that bad at like trying to get people to park.
Yeah. Whatever. Now you know.
Whatever.
Never do it again.
So that's awesome that we have the same one.
Donda Jim. No.
So we tried this before. We're going to try it again. Pose your favorite Donda Jim moment. your weirdest volunteer gig you've ever done. Weirdest experience. Our Twitter handle is @WaStateCFD. I've been told by our very savvy marketing person that's what I forgot.
She's a millennial.
Yes, and that's the reason why we had no tweets.
Obviously.
Because I did not give you our Twitter handle. Hashtag weird volunteer. I don't know.
Hashtag sorry.
at WaStateCFD. That is our Twitter handle. So, you know, you can go ahead and interact with us that way.
Yeah.
Without any further ado, however, we're going to dive into our first interview with Grave Concerns and Laurel Lemke. Here it is. Okay, so we're here with Laurel Lemke. She is the chairperson for Grave Concerns Association. Laurel, thank you for coming on the podcast.
It's great to be here.
Awesome. I think we actually have a mutual person we know, Janice Williams.
Janice Williams.
That's right.
From Western State Hospital. She was our combined fund drive leader for several years.
Yeah, shout out to Janice. She was awesome. She had some enthusiasm.
Right, and Grave Concerns was very fortunate because we had... silent auction several years, and Grave Concerns was the beneficiary for 4 of those years and really helped us with our project of restoring the cemetery.
Yeah, and she would show up to basically everything possible.
Oh, yes, and twice we came to the Masquerade Ball.
Yes.
And had an event, and that was just a wonderful opportunity to meet some of the other nonprofits that are in the area.
Yeah,
and have fun and dance.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So I'll be coming out right around the corner. You guys should sign up again.
Yes.
So you work for an organization called Grave Concerns Association. Can you tell us a little bit about the history of it and then what exactly you guys do? Because I think it's pretty unique.
Yeah. And you say work, but as we're saying, this is about volunteer organizations and we are an all volunteer organization.
Right.
So the Grave Concerns Association has a specific mission of restoring the cemetery that was left behind by Western State Hospital. Mm-hmm. It's actually located in Fort Stilicum Park, which is managed by the city of Lakewood. It is 6 acres. Over 3,200 persons were buried in about a 75-year period from 1876 to 1953. And at that time, they were all buried with numbers, various names. Hmm. And I did not really know about the cemetery. I knew there was a cemetery somewhere. And in 2000, John Lucas, who was an LPN at the hospital, came to see me and he says, "We need to do something about this cemetery. We need to recognize it." I didn't even know where it was.
Yeah.
And he took me across the street and it was a big field that actually I'd been to before, but did not know it was a cemetery.
Right.
So we decided we wanted to have an annual event there, and we had it in October, which co-occurs with NAMI, has National Alliance on Mental Illness, has an event that's the Mental Illness Awareness Week. So we had it at that time, and people got very excited. There was a newspaper article, and we got contacted by a woman who was with the Washington State Historical Cemetery Association. People got excited. The patients went out in the cemetery because we didn't see any markers. There were very few markers there. Yeah. We thought they'd disappeared. It turned out they'd all sunk under the ground.
Wow.
And it took patients 18 months. They had a work crew that would go out there. It was the patients that were developmentally disabled. They would go out with sticks, and they would see me on campus, and they'd say, oh, I just found 8 markers today, or they found 10. But they were able to raise 3,200 markers this way.
Wow.
When we started, there were only about 12 markers with names on them that families had put in at some point. So we brought up the markers, and we thought, you know, this is nice. You know, we got the markers there, and Sherry Storms, who was working in King County at that point, said, we really need to give names to these.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, because of, you know, HIPAA and state law, they were kept private. So Sherry worked at that time with Mike Carroll in the legislature and introduced a bill. And we had the opportunity to go and testify.
That's awesome.
And it was amazing because both the House and the Senate passed it unanimously that we could make the names public for the purpose of memorialization.
Yeah.
And so that started a new our mission of restoring cemetery markers.
Yeah.
Nice.
And fortunately, a woman from the National Alliance in Mental Illness in Olympia reached out to an organization, to a company, and they said they could make markers for us for $40 plus tax.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
And this is now, we have markers made by Premier Memorial in Tacoma, which is an ongoing charity contribution for us to make these markers for us, which are granite. And they have the data on the year of birth and the year of death and the person's name. And the number.
Yeah.
And the thing that's very important is they also have the dash between, because we like to read the name, the dash, because the dash is a poem about how really that's the most important part of your life.
Yeah,
what you do before the
dates.
Yeah,
I've heard that.
So that is what happened. So we were able to do that. So we do fundraising in various ways.
Yeah.
The combined fund drive was excellent for us. We have some people contribute to us on an ongoing basis. We also like to go to bazaars.
Yeah.
And we love going to bazaars, particularly when it's raising funds for another organization.
Yeah.
Like we've been with the Tacoma Musical Playhouse. We've gone to the Weatherly Inn that's raising funds for Alzheimer's. And we sell these wonderful bags that are recycled bags. We sell jewelry. But part of it is we just love to talk to people.
Yeah.
And so that's part of what we do.
Yeah. So I grew up in Steilacoom.
Really?
Yeah. So Western State has this like special status for those who grew up in Steilacoom. In fact, like half of our softball field, I think, was actually on Western State property.
Oh,
at the
really?
Time.
Yeah. So they've had that there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And one of the things that people think about today, I mean, if people think that Western State Hospital is getting peppered in the media today with conditions, that's one of the things I think historically people don't know about the treatment or, frankly, maybe a little bit of mistreatment of some of the folks who were mentally ill at the time, and how the gravestones is just like a microcosm of exactly what we thought of the of folks who were maybe mentally ill or who were disabled at the time. I mean, it's pretty important work to try and memorialize these people appropriately.
Right, and I think part of it is people use the techniques they could use at the time, and actually where we're located is Fort Steilacoom Park is what was used as the farm for the hospital. And there's actually one of the some people used to live in the park up on the hill, and that's now become like a memorial and of the area. But I think what was good though is that they did make markers and they did keep records.
Yeah.
And what we were able to do when we started, there was a handwritten record that was chronological, and then there was a type record, and then we created a database that was better. So at least there are some states like in Georgia. They use these metal markers that people remove so they can mow the lawn. So so we're very fortunate that, you know, we have these records. Right now, actually, Northern State Hospital, there's a group that's starting to do their cemetery restoration, because Northern State Hospital recently was turned over to Cedra Woolley.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a separate group that's working on restoring
so
their cemetery.
So do you get lots of feedback from the families of folks who you find the gravestones for and mark appropriately?
Well, when we first started, we didn't have any family contact, and partly because the information we're allowed to have is just the name, the date of birth, and date of death. But over the years, we've had contact. Some months, as many as four people have contacted us. Mm-hmm. We've actually had family events.
Mm-hmm.
The one family contacted us. They had not been able to find their grandmother, and of the work we've done, we were able to find the grandmother.
Wow.
And
cool.
The family came from several states and had a big event, and they ordered a special marker. We put in markers twice a year, usually, because in talking about volunteerism, because it's when the city of Lakewood has two big volunteer events in the spring and in the fall. And we always think it's very special when we have a family come there. We've also created in one place at some point they cremated individuals. I'm not sure why some were cremated and some were not, but we had a big area where cremated remains were laid as the cemetery was being closed. And I've had the opportunity to bring many family members there and speak to them, and often also take them to the museum. It's kind of like doing a little bit of grief counseling, a lot of education, because many of these people, there were dead ends in their genealogy search, and they did not know the person was there. And it's because we've been able to make the names public, they've been able to find it.
That's cool.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool.
So you talked a little bit about people being able to come out on volunteer days for to help out. So what kind of role do volunteers play with your organization?
Well, when we do when we have the markers put in, we have a couple volunteers that go actually to Premier Memorial and pick up the markers. So we usually have a van and maybe a pickup truck. So we'll bring up to 40 markers on one of these days. And then we have some people who, you know, aren't able to walk as well. So they're like greeting people and taking attendance. And then we teach people about how we do the markers. We have kind of like a square that is the size of the marker, and we spray paint it. Kids love doing that. Spray paint that. And then the ground's kind of hard, so usually you need a pickaxe to get started. But then people dig a square hole for that, and then, you know, lift it up and put it in, and then clean around it. We also, particularly in the spring, need a lot to pick up a lot of branches. Fortunately, the area is fairly honored. We don't find very much trash in it, you know.
That's nice.
People keep it pretty well, and so that's what a marker event is. We've also trimmed up around our. We have a monument, so we will clean there. So the main days we do these are, they have Parks Appreciation Day, which is the fourth Saturday in April, and that in everything in the parks. And then there's kids have a Make a Difference Day in October, and they choose events, and we're fortunate because they have chosen us every year. We particularly love it when we get high school football players come in. We get a lot of work done then. And actually we chose to do some markers last weekend during Summerfest. Man happened to be in the cemetery walking around, and Carol Slaughter, who's our vice chair, said, "Are you here to volunteer?" He says, "No, what are you doing?" And he jumped right in. He's retired. Chet is retired Army, and he's ready to keep continuing with us.
That's cool.
We also have a flag to put up and take down during the ceremonies. And normally we also have food. So
food's always good.
Food and water.
Yeah, I mean, imagine the amount of money you're saving from not having a ground crew have to do all that.
Oh, yeah. And we're also, you know, we're very fortunate because with the city of Lakewood, they mow the grass a few times a year and helping us keep up the fence and help us with the trash. And they brought us out a big container for us to put the dirt so the dirt could be taken away. So it's a community organization.
That's really
cool.
Yeah.
What's the biggest thing that a volunteer can take away from volunteering with you guys?
Well, people take various things away. Because when I started, I had no idea I was going to be doing this project. And for me, it was more mental health and dignity and bringing back dignity to people. And so that's why I signed on to do it.
Right.
And as we've done it, we when we've had young kids come in, sometimes they're afraid to come to the cemetery.
Sure.
They're not comfortable, but they become comfortable more sooner, and they learn about respect and about people coming forward. We also, for example, in next week we have a group coming from the University of Washington Tacoma, and they're interested in learning about death practices and dignity, and so we give that information to them. What I found was interesting is we do team up with a lot of other organizations. Mm-hmm. And one time we were being interviewed by a newspaper, and a woman who was the head of a local historical society had started coming to our meetings, and I thought, well, that's nice, you know, but and then she shared that she'd had a family member that had bipolar illness and had passed, and how this was meaningful to her. So
very nice.
It's a way for people to do something kind of hands-on that's related to history, that's related to the environment, that's related to mental health, and, you know, all together, and just people doing good and actually having fun. And being outdoors, and the stories. I think it's the stories, and it's also multi-generational, because we had our volunteers range from fifth grade to 80s.
That's awesome.
Last weekend.
I imagine that, you know, working in an environment like Western State sort of every day can be tough, because you're dealing with very, very serious, very, very serious mental illness and folks who you're long hours, tough, you know, tough work. Personally for you, did you find working on this, fulfilling? Did it kind of get you through the day, you know, trying to really memorialize these folks appropriately?
Well, it was, you know, it was not technically my job, but people would call me, because I always, we had to separate, you know, the nonprofit from the work.
That's right.
But people would get very excited, and people would ask me questions. And as a matter of fact, I'm saying this in my third week of retirement, the one plaque I got was from the chaplains. And the chaplains wrote a plaque for me that talked about what I had done and how important this had been. And so I remember the one time I got a phone call from a gentleman, and he was trying to find his ancestor who was from the Civil War. And we had him. It happened to be marker number 200. That gentleman called me four times that same day. And what's interesting is now another descendant who is living in our area has joined our organization and is helping with it. But I think it's being able to do something good, being able to do something constructive. And even when we had the opportunity to have a Lakewood lodging tax to have brochures made. And their brochures were really huge pieces of paper. And if we had them folded, that would have been a cost. We took them to the patient and the patient groups. They got paid for folding these by hand.
Nice.
And they were excited about it. And I've actually sometimes gone to wards, and I will see this on display. But they're something they were proud of, and I'm particularly the patients were proud of doing it. And so I think it was symbolic that it was, you know, something good that could be done. And I know that's people were concerned. Well, she's retiring. Will she still be working with volunteers? Yes. Still, we're still active with grave concerns. And we have a number of retirees involved. And we're very pleased, because at a recent event, one of the current nurses came forth and said she wanted to be involved. But I think particularly, like when we did our combined fund drive, silent auction, I wanted to be sure there were items that were like under $10 or $5 so that many people could participate and feel like they had, had
they
a way
had
to be involved.
That's right.
Do you find that there are a lot of employees at DSHS outside of Western State who are like, you know what, I want to be involved with grave concerns because of Western State Hospital?
I'm not sure. We've had one way's we've had some people that are involved through NAMI, and uh-huh. they're also with DSHS that have become concerned. I know when we did it 1 year, first year we did it, it was because it was interesting. I think it was more interesting with the combined fund drive if you have something local.
Sure.
Absolutely.
That can be done. And so this is local, and people, even if they don't go in the cemetery, they go across the street all the time to use all the...
The playground, the baseball field,
the dog park is.
I remember all that.
The dog park's right behind us, and sometimes when we're doing an event, there's like a cross country meet.
That's true.
Going across
also,
from us.
Also, they had Civil War reenactment there.
Yes.
Oh, yeah,
they did
for many years.
Yes,
yeah,
they did.
And that's why that's and the reenactors came in last year when we put in 3 more Civil War markers.
Wow!
Oh, wow!
And we were going to put in more this September, but they found even more. So probably 2019 we'll be having another big Civil War.
Very
cool. That's cool
installation.
Wow, that's very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's say someone hears this podcast and they want to start giving to Grave Concerns Association. Can you talk about what donations do for your guys' organization?
Well, one of the things we did when we look at things, most of our donations go towards the purchase of markers.
Sure.
In a given year, 80 or 90% is what we do for markers. We have some overhead for keeping our web page, keeping the web page up. But most of our expenses go towards the markers.
Right. Yeah, making sure that folks are remembered and people can find them.
Right.
Yeah. That's awesome. Do you have any upcoming events or things you want to talk about?
Well, we will be this summer. We'll be at the Lakewood has a. Have you been to the Lakewood Farmers Market?
Of course, I've
been. On Tuesdays. Well, you say you live
this
on the,
guy.
Yeah. The Farmers Market is wonderful, and
yes.
one of the things we're fortunate is that the Lakewood Historical Society has embraced us.
Yeah.
And they have a booth, and so we are at the booth with them, and that's we have the opportunity to buy our bags and to buy our jewelry.
Right.
We also will be having the big. Event in October. October the 4th, Saturday in October, we'll be putting in more markers at that time. But we are available, and if we particularly go through the we have an active Facebook page that talks about what things are going on. But we will be, we're at several bazaars. We're welcome to go to bazaars. We're good to come and do guest speaking, and
Hopefully at the Masquerade Ball this year.
Masquerade Ball. We're going to be having a picnic next month, but we usually meet once a month at Historic Fort Steilacoom on the fourth Monday, or the third Monday. But just the big thing is to keep a lot to date up through our Facebook page, and we're relaunching our webpage very soon.
Great.
And do you sell your bags online?
We haven't sold them online, but we're willing to deliver or mail them. They're like 15 or 20. We're also, I think we're going to take a big step and move to the square.
Oh, nice.
We've mainly one of the things we're very fortunate is that we have our new treasurer, Ivory, who works at the Museum of Glass, who's majoring in accounting. She's helping us move forward.
So she'll be able to get you there.
So that's, another example is our group just networks a lot.
Yeah.
And like National Alliance on Mental Illness has held the picnic at the cemetery the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
And we just like to, I kind of like to say cross-pollinate.
Yeah.
And and we're also we get contacted sometimes by organizations saying we want to we need to do a volunteer project, and we say, we've got something we can you can do, and we can always figure out something. And 1 year the Harrison Prep School came out and did a week without walls learned, and we're able to hook them up with a lot of different people.
Cool. Well, that's awesome. The one thing, especially growing up in that area, that I've always found so interesting is it's really one of the most historic places in Western Washington. There's firsts everywhere there, first this and first that and all these sort of different things. And so it's really cool to have an organization so local taking care of really historic, historic importance you know, in that area. So thank you so much and good luck. Thanks for walking down memory lane with me.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. Well, Ira light.
Well, his eyes light up.
Hope to see you soon.
And, yeah.
Either maybe hopefully before the masquerade ball.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. So absolutely. Thank you so much for coming on, Laurel.
Thank you.
That was my trip down my adolescence with Laurel Lemke.
You're so wistful.
Lots of flashbacks there. Yeah. Most of them good now, but probably would have been bad, you know, like 10 years ago.
Because you were still processing?
I was still stewing in high school rejection at that time.
Sure, sure.
But it was pretty fun this time.
It's nice to see you grow and progress.
Thanks. I appreciate that, Mom. Yeah. So the next interview is really cool. This is also a group of folks that some people in the Olympia area might know well. This is Soroptimus International of Olympia and the fundraising director, Karen Hall, previous president, Gwen Morris. Here is that interview now. All right. So we are here now with Soroptimus International. I'm so happy I know you, Karen, so that I can get that name correct. We are here with fundraising director Karen Hall and the previous president, last year's president, Gwen Morris. Thank you guys for coming.
You're welcome. Thank you for inviting us.
So first of all, I think people may have heard of Soroptimus through the Exceptional Women's Award that you guys have and through some of the things you do throughout the community. But can you talk a little bit about the history of Soroptimus and then kind of cool what it is that you do for women and girls in the community?
Sure. Karen, you want to start?
Sure. Soroptimus is an international organization that's worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
Our mission is to improve the lives of women and girls through education mm-hmm. and empowerment. And so they earn many different ways of educational awards to programs where they're focusing on girls in STEM technology, mm-hmm. training, and things like that. The vision is to just make sure that we help combat poverty, violence towards women in many different ways. Again, what we do in our country is different from other countries.
Right.
And what we do in our community is different from other
places
in the country.
So even though it's an international organization, you guys focus fairly locally, right, on issues related to women and girls in this particular community.
In our particular area, primarily Thurston County, but the surrounding counties as well. And so our goal is to provide some sort of an avenue to help women and girls building their socioeconomic environment to help them better find better avenues of success and to help them find another way to have a better life for themselves and for their families.
Yeah.
Such as some of our educational awards are, it's different than a scholarship in that we provide the funds directly to the awardee for them to be able to meet their primary everyday needs while they're in school. Whereas a scholarship goes directly to a school to help pay for their tuition and their books.
Yeah.
But there's so many other things that impact the woman that's going to school. So our educational award helps them to navigate that avenue.
That's brilliant.
And then our STEM program, we work on middle school girls from 11 to 15 to provide them information and expose them to careers and professional women that will give them some ideas for careers and help broaden their ideas of what's possible for a young girl in today's world.
Awesome.
Very nice.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, reality is you see it. I mean, the statistics are incredible. Education is where it starts, right? And
yes.
I mean, and in some countries there are women and girls who aren't educated almost at all. So we do have a rare opportunity here to actually take advantage of some of the systems that are in place here that could actually empower girls already.
Yes.
Right.
Also, it is strange to think about the fact that, like, you still have to pay for food while you're going to school and rent and things like that, right?
Daycare.
Yes,
daycare.
Yeah. So that's really awesome.
Sometimes you have those lab fees that are not covered by tuition. So that educational award helps give them that little up or gives them a sense of, I can do this, even though that's paid for. How do I make this happen?
Yeah.
And that little stipend comes in and helps.
How do you find the awardees? So does a girl or a woman who's looking to advance their education come to you guys? Do they apply online? How does it usually work?
Okay, so
Just to be clear, the educational award is actually for women who are the sole breadwinners, who
okay.
are generally low income and yeah. have dependents. So yeah. usually they're raising children and they're
on their own.
A single parent. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And women come to us either through the universities and colleges here locally, both the community college as well as the state colleges or even the private colleges, but also through international and national website. So if you go to the Soroptimist International of America site and you go to Live Your Dream Award or even just Google Live Your Dream Award, it actually will click you into an application that they can fill out, and then it's sent to the individual clubs.
Oh, that's excellent.
And then we vet those annually. And then we've created a secondary award because we found that we really like to keep in contact with the women because, right. you know, college is not just 1 year.
Yeah.
So we usually like to bring them back, and if they still meet all the criteria, we then reevaluate them with other past awardees, and then we give out a continuation award of the same one.
Cool.
So
very cool.
Last year we gave out three continuation awards in addition to our annual award.
And the STEM that you do with girls in middle school, are you doing that in mostly tougher areas? Or are you doing that across the board for girls no matter what?
It's a partnership that we engage in.
Yeah.
The YWCA has Girls Without Limits,
right.
which is summer camps or winter camps, school break camps that they offer those STEM programs. What we do is we provide the YWCA with funds to be able to provide tuition assistance mm-hmm. to girls that would not otherwise be able to go.
Got it.
And then there is a Thurston County Expanding Your Horizons program.
Yeah.
Again, we partnership with them, and we provide them funds to, again, provide tuition assistance for girls that would not otherwise be able to pay the tuition to be able to attend.
Excellent.
With Expanding Your Horizons, our club also participates by providing volunteers to help with because it's a one-day workshop mm-hmm. where you have women in the community come in and volunteer their time to provide three workshops during the day to girls. I'm excited about Expanding Your Horizons because it's really a fun thing to see these girls. They're excited. They come all the way from Vancouver here to South Puget Sound to attend this one-day workshop.
Oh, nice.
Wow. And both Karen and I also volunteer to provide workshops during that day.
Right.
So we participate hands-on as
well. That's excellent. Yeah. So like most organizations, I imagine you guys are mostly volunteer-run.
Yes.
Right?
All volunteer-run.
So what kind of impacts have you seen volunteers have? Not only for your organization, but overall, like volunteerism is pretty important. What sort of impacts to your organization first, and then overall to the community? Why do you think it's important?
Volunteering in the community tends to bring out more volunteerism, also tends to be more awareness of the community. So, for example, our touch points with other programs like the Y and the Expanding Your Horizons and some of the other organizations in the area get more knowledge about it because we're out there doing the work with them. Then we actually can then talk about their programs because we're involved with them.
Right.
Then you end up with people who then want to volunteer more outside of even some of the things we do, because we have many of our own volunteers who are part of our club also then volunteer in additional things. So on myself, I do some work with the Y, and I do some work with a local family shelter. We have a member who goes to the DSHS and works with their clothing closet.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, very
kind
cool.
Of builds on itself.
Yeah, nice. It builds on itself. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. So every year, the CFD is heavily volunteer run. Like, there's four of us who are staff, and we rely on volunteers beyond all belief. So we hear every year, I volunteer. I don't need recognition. I don't need thank yous and that kind of thing. But we like to give thank yous and recognition to volunteers. How important do you guys find that with volunteers you work with? How important is it to give them recognition for the work they've done?
I find that it's important. It gives them a sense of satisfaction of knowing that I've contributed.
Yeah.
They're not looking for aha moments or any accolades, but being recognized, and it encourages them that what I did really did matter. Someone recognized it, and so that encourages them to continue.
Yeah.
You know, I don't need an award. I don't need to stand on a stage, but to know that what I've done is not just forgotten, but it has been acknowledged.
Yeah.
It gives me a lift. It gives me more impetus to keep going and doing things.
Yeah.
And I find that for the community, just talking to people such as one of our programs that we partner with at the YWCA, the Sisters in Opportunity, and just speaking with some of the participants there, They're just very gleeful and very thankful for what we do. And listening to some of their stories, we have helped them to increase their self-confidence.
Nice.
And their ability awesome. To know that they, you know, I can do this. And, you know, I was really happy that your speaking with me allowed me to do this.
Yeah.
So it's rewarding
that's
to see
great.
That what we do is benefiting the community.
That's awesome. One of the rare things you guys do is, because you have so many connections in the community, is you do awards, because well, like the CFDE only does awards for our volunteers, right?
Yeah.
We don't know much beyond that. You have this really, I think it's kind of a really cool awards banquet that you started 2 years ago now, right?
Yes,
two
right.
years ago that I think will do nothing but grow.
Yes.
Called the South Sound Exceptional Women Awards. So
yes.
two people that I know have actually won awards. Can you talk a little bit about why awards like that are important? Why you guys even started the idea of the South Sound Exceptional Woman, which, by the way, is a completely innovative idea. I don't think there's very many other people doing that.
I'll turn that over to Karen.
Yeah, actually, and that's what we were looking for, was something that was unique, that was a way to get recognition to women in the community. Our goal, another member of myself, Maggie Connors, and I sat down and said, we need something that nobody else is doing.
Yeah.
We needed something that was bringing awareness and part of our focus, empowering women, giving them the opportunity to shine and giving them the opportunity to feel like they have been noticed
yeah.
for the work that they do. So in light of volunteerism, you know, our focus is on asking organizations, and we opened it up to all levels, corporations, to armed forces, military, as well as
law enforcement,
state mm-hmm. offices, nonprofits, other service groups like ours, like the Zantas and the Junior
yeah.
Leagues and things like that, groups like that.
Large and small businesses.
Large and small businesses.
Yeah.
And we're asking them to fill out a very brief little application and just tell us why they feel that woman needs to be recognized. Because a lot of times women, and men do it too, but in general, women are really good at being behind the scenes and taking mm-hmm. care of things and settling it out.
Yeah, yeah.
they take care of stuff and people don't recognize it because it's just done so smoothly and so
right.
well. And it can be anyone from somebody who is just a phenomenal worker at mm-hmm. an environment that doesn't necessarily have it. I mean, back in the 80s, there used to be a lot of, you know, banquets at for the businesses that you worked for. And they used to have a employee of the years or
yeah.
whatever. People aren't doing those anymore
right.
since the crash. And since we had a lot of downsizing, there's just not an ability to do that except for, say, in some of the state avenues.
Yeah.
So we ask for up to 20 awardees, just because we would be there all night if we did.
yeah.
We may consider to do 25.
Yeah.
It all depends. This, as you said, this was our second year.
Mm-hmm.
And we ask for Tri-County. We're looking for Thurston, Pearson, Lewis counties. So far we haven't had Lewis County, but when we do Pierce, we usually get the military.
Right.
We've got a few military organizations that support the military, which is really, really great too, because again, where are they getting recognized? They're doing
yeah.
so much work.
That's
for
right.
the folks that are either coming back or that are in the field. And so we do a call for applications in November, and then we stop it when we have 20.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and our goal is, again, to find the women who are people who could be a super volunteer that shows up at a shelter and works tirelessly to help them out, or
mm-hmm.
at the other bank, or at, you know, wherever locally, to women who are just, they work full time, they have kids, oh, and they have time to volunteer,
yes.
which is a large portion of the people that we have. And, you know, and then we've been lucky enough to have some bigwigs who have been, you know,
yeah.
but they deserve uh-huh. to have some accolade as well. I mean, everybody knows, you know, Karen Frazier and
mm-hmm.
Kim Wyman, but do they really know the kind of work that they're doing outside of their jobs?
Right.
Yeah.
Plus, it's
years.
A very big deal to have women in those positions. I think
right.
to,
yes.
to have them be
absolutely.
Recognized.
Yes.
For the work that they're doing as civil servants, elected civil servants, which, by
absolutely.
The way, was not something that happened all the time to
yeah,
have females
exactly.
in those
exactly.
positions. I think that's important.
Yes.
So the goal, again, is just to make sure that we're recognizing women and that we are leaving it open.
Yeah.
You know, I guess I'm just, I'm at a loss.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. Well, see that? We edit that right out.
Yep.
You know, I kind of see the South Sound Exception of Women with a three-prong purpose there, as Karen said. You know, there are a lot of women that do things that we don't necessarily see, but this program gives an opportunity for someone to recognize them because they don't have to be an employee.
That's right.
Okay. And then in addition, it allows us to have that personal interaction with the various different groups in the community. Mm-hmm. It allows us to bring in that personal touch.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And once they gather, then it's our main fundraiser for the year.
Yeah, so, also sneaky good idea there, by the way. Very good.
Yeah. But, you know, the funds are there, but it just allows so much more interaction for people to get together and share and understand each other and appreciate of what's going on in the community. And,
yeah.
Oh, I didn't know you did this.
Yes.
That's
yes.
exactly right. Yeah. My favorite is when people are like, oh, I know her from this. Yes. I had no idea she did that.
Exactly.
Yeah. And one of the things to mention is that this is a non-competitive. We feel strongly in the fact that we should not judge one woman against another. One woman who spends, you know, 5 hours a week volunteering or even spending time doing something is no more or no less valuable than the woman who spends 60 hours a week doing it. I mean, yes, they have their merits, and there are other awards in our community that can recognize those women. But the reality is that everybody is putting in something. And so the organizations are the ones that are using their own
vetting process
to bring us the women. And we're using it as a tool to do a one big recognition a banquet for them.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's really cool. And speaking as a man who has a daughter, you want to make sure that she grows up in a world where she feels like these sort of accomplishments are a big deal.
Our goal is to actually get some girls.
Yeah.
Just that because it's a spring event, it's really tough with the schools.
Yeah.
Our goal is to have any girl from 16 and above. So we're still working on trying to figure out how to get that, the dates and to work out with the high schools to get them to recognize girls. But there's lots of girls who are doing lots of really good work in the community as well.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, so. Great future generation coming up. That's for sure.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
So let's say someone hears the podcast and they want to start giving Disruptivist International of Olympia.
Yes.
What do donations do for you guys' organization?
Oh, a number of things. That's first of all, it funds our projects, our programs. It allows us to be able to provide that educational award to that sole parent trying to get the education. It allows us to be able to provide those tuition assistance to the Girls Without Limits and Expanding Your Horizons. It allows us to be able to continue another one of our projects that we call Comfort Packs.
Okay.
It's where we provide hygiene items and undies to foster children as they're transitioning from foster care to a private home.
Oh, okay.
So we call it a Comfort Pack because it's a backpack that has all of their utility, you know, their hygiene items and maybe some undies and socks.
Sure.
And if you can imagine going into a strange home and you're trying to get settled in, but then you have all the basic necessities right there and you don't have to have that fearful conversation, especially for a young girl. I don't know how to say this, but I need some sanitary pads.
Right.
Or exactly. They don't have to have that fearful conversation.
Yes.
They can go into their backpack and get it. So that's why we call them comfort packs. It provides that small amount of comfort.
Sure.
So those funds help us do that. It helps us develop our programs and be able to open up the South Sound Exceptional Women program to bring things in where you also bring in funds to help us dedicate towards that. We also have an international educational award where we give to a student in Africa, and that stipend provides for 1 year of school, if you can believe what we pay here.
Yeah.
Wow.
But it helps women be able to, some of them are what, lawyers?
Mostly physicians or medical personnel.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. We've been able to support up to 15, since the 1980s, we've been able to support up to 15 women through their education, so multiple years in a row, yeah. in order for them to get their medical degrees Excellent. Or their nursing nice. Degrees in Rwanda, Africa.
Wow.
Through the Hope International.
Very cool.
Yeah, Hope of Africa University, excuse me.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it yeah. is.
Yeah, that's awesome. So can you guys talk a little bit about any events you have coming up or things you're preparing for?
Well, the new year, we break for the summer.
Okay.
So in the new year, we always have a winter event called the Bottle Auction, which we love, which is it's usually a member driven, but we always encourage guests to come. It's a small little function, very low entrance fee, you know,
yeah.
$5 to $15. And it's usually either provided by either membership. Food is either provided by membership or by a low cost donation of food. And they are wrapped items that you don't know what they are, and they are bid on blind.
Okay.
And they have a bottle in them. They are filled with bottles or bottles filled with other things. Yeah. And it doesn't have to be alcohol. Sometimes it's really, really
like
nice.
Schwab
bath
shampoo.
Stuff.
It could be. I know, I was going to say dish soap.
I actually did get some Schwab shampoo and conditioner on you. No, actually, a lot of them are really, really nice. From really nice high-end toiletry items, you know, or people are really, really creative with their bottles. I actually have an umbrella that looks like a bottle that somebody got for
awesome.
That purpose, and it was filled with a bunch of other things. And it's around Christmas time, right? It's usually early December.
Yeah.
And that is, and then we also have in the early part of the year, once released, we have something called the LunaFest Film Festival.
Oh, yeah.
It's an international call for short films in 90 minutes. There's anywhere from 6 to 8 films that mm-hmm. are shown. And we provide generally the first showing in Thurston County, and it is a fundraiser. It's a small one, and we provided it the last few years. We'd had it SPSCC, and now we're doing it at Evergreen. And it's a great avenue for, you know, anywhere from animation to story, you know, just standard storylines to I'm trying to remember what it's called.
Yeah.
you got me on this one. So there's a variety of films within that time period, and they're lovely. They're women, you know, women produced, written by, and sometimes, by and for women and directed by women.
Yeah.
And we had a panel last year as well.
And they bring in social issues, women's social issues. Mm-hmm. And I see it as a grand opportunity for community discussion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we come in, we watch the films because all the films are touching
yeah.
on something. One of the films was about a young kid. A parent, how they reacted to their young child, like 6 years old, recognizing that he was transgender.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you handle that?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Are about a young girl who wanted to be a boxer, and you know that's not
yeah.
A skill set that we put for women.
Right.
Another was about some young Afghanistan young girls dealing with the war-torn area and mm-hmm. how it impacts them professionally
yeah. Yeah.
and everything.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
That's all right.
LunaFest is great. What it does is I see the biggest avenue is the community involvement
right.
and the discussion on social issues.
Yeah.
How do we handle this?
Yes.
Sure.
Yes. Yeah. Great call.
You had asked earlier about donations.
Yeah.
Heather. Sorry about that. We kind of
skipped over
that. A lot of the information about our club as well as these events that are happening are on our Facebook page.
Yeah.
They're on our website.
Mm-hmm.
We do have Twitter and Instagram. We're not as savvy on those. We're trying.
We're not. No one is savvy on
really,
them. Get out of here.
It's kind of hard. I heard
yeah, I mean, you got to be
for,
quick with
I know,
Twitter,
I know,
right?
I heard you calling for Instagram stuff and one of your other podcasts. I thought that was great. So,
nobody answered that, by the way. It proves what our demographic is.
Yeah, I was wondering about that. Okay, so you're having problems with a podcast.
Yeah,
okay.
it's pretty much
no,
over,
we just
across
do
the board.
It for marketing purposes mostly. But
yeah.
on both our Facebook page and our front page of our website, we actually have a donation key.
Nice.
Yes.
And so if somebody wanted to donate directly, then they obviously can just click donate. But what we'd rather them do is to go through the combined fund drive if they're a state worker.
Yes.
Because it improves and it works with your program. And
yeah.
then we can also see the value that we have because
That's right.
we go out to the Employee Appreciation Day and we do touch points with people all day long. And
yeah.
we really mm-hmm. like going out and meeting state employees because a large percentage of the people in the population here are state
yeah.
employees, as
right.
well as in our group. We have retired teachers, we have retired, you know, executives
yeah.
and yeah, lots of folks that work within who had worked within the state
yeah.
system as well. So
yeah. Excellent. Mm-hmm. Well, I really thank you guys for coming today. It really is great. I think organizations like Soroptimus that are doing real applied work in the community to help women and girls, I think is really incredible. So thank you guys for coming to the podcast. We really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us today and sharing kind of the power of volunteers. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Invitation.
And thank you everybody for donating to the Combined Fund Drive, exactly. Because it does make a difference with our club.
Awesome. Okay, so that was the two interviews with two completely different, totally eclectic organizations, mm-hmm. talking about the same thing, which was pretty neat.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about some of the facts and figures associated with volunteerism?
Sure.
Ms. Lucas.
Absolutely. Like I said earlier, last year, CFD volunteers saved charities $500,000.
That was great.
Nice job.
Excellent.
But we've actually, you know, tried to gather from volunteers in the past, you know, like what makes volunteering good for you.
Yeah.
And like, it's across the board, like volunteering, there's a happiness effect.
Yes,
when you volunteer. So compared with people who never volunteer, the odds of being, quote, very happy rises 7% amongst people who volunteer monthly,
mm-hmm.
and 12% amongst those who volunteer every 2 weeks.
That makes sense.
And then, just so you know, the 16% of people say they're very happy. That is kind of like a mentally equal thing to having an income of $75,000 to $100,000 a year.
Wow.
So that 12% volunteerism, yeah. you know, if you volunteer every 2 weeks, I mean, you're like feeling like you're...
You literally are rich.
You're rich. You are rich. Absolutely. It connects you to others. It's good for your mind and body.
Mm-hmm.
And it helps counteract the effects of stress, anger, and anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
Volunteering does.
Yeah.
Volunteering increases self-confidence and provides a sense of purpose. And then also, volunteering helps you stay physically healthy.
Mm-hmm.
So studies have found that those who volunteer have a lower mortality rate than those who do not.
Yeah.
Older volunteers, which you see sometimes with retired folks, they have the ability to volunteer more, so they do. They tend to walk more. They find it easier to cope with everyday tasks. They're less likely to develop high blood pressure and have better thinking skills.
Look at that.
Yeah, and then, of course, volunteering teaches you skills that you may not have learned on job sites.
Yeah.
So you get that going on.
Mm-hmm.
But then I also found some stats for Washington State.
Okay.
Because Washington State,
yeah, because
right?
we're here.
So there was this, what is this? It was an article about the 15 states who volunteer the most.
Okay.
Out of 1 to 15, where's Washington?
I'm going to say we're number 8.
That's pretty close.
Yeah?
But not, you're like, no. I was like, no, that's close. But then I was like, well, out of 15.
Pretty you, close, but no?
That's not really.
Okay. So, all right. What is it then?
We're 15th.
Oh.
Yeah.
But no. 15. So it's literally not close at
yeah,
all.
Yeah. So I realized that I said that and then tried to scale
you
it back.
A 1 in 15 chance. And you got it really
and you
close.
Blew it. You blew it.
Halfway there. Right there. Come on.
Yeah. So Washington last year, we were ranked as 15th and our volunteer rate is 30.6%. So of our
that's
state's
how
population.
Many folks volunteer.
Yeah, 30%, okay. Right? So the total value of volunteer work done, and they have a stat for 2015 on that number, is $6 billion.
Wow.
Washington State people have saved
wow.
charities.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and then let's see. So comparable to the nation, I mean... our volunteers, there's like, you can say that is translating to about 1.6 million people
yeah.
who volunteer in Washington State, and that translates to almost 2 million hours of service.
Wow.
Because we only that's had 21,000 with the combined fund drive last yeah. year, but like 2 million hours when
yeah.
we combine everybody all
yeah,
together.
Yeah, that's amazing.
So, yeah, the volunteer rate, the national average is 24.9, so we're at 30.6.
Mm-hmm.
There are other states that are... great with volunteering as well.
Who's the number one?
You want to take a guess?
Okay, so I'm going to go either like a bigger state or like one of the heartland states. So I'm going to say let's go with California.
You know, California didn't make that list at all.
California didn't make the list.
No.
Eat it, California. Get a little bit more generous down there.
I know.
All right, who is number one? Ohio?
Ohio's not on the list either for these top 15.
Well, Ohio get
I mean, you're kind of poking around. Like, two states that are near and dear to your heart.
Oh, a little Wisconsin action?
Wisconsin's number three.
Get out of here. Yeah. Good job, Wisconsin. Yeah. Way to step up.
You got another one? Maybe a place where you were born?
Kansas?
Yeah, so seven.
What? Look at I see. I was saying Heartland. Mm-hmm. Look at that. Mm-hmm. Look at the people in my old state stepping up there.
Yeah, my old state's not on here.
Oh, Illinois didn't make the list.
Illinois didn't make the list.
Oh, that's
whatever.
Too bad. Well, you know, they're weird.
Yeah. Thanks.
Illinois.
So anyway, the number one state is Utah.
Wow, Utah.
Yeah, so Utah's volunteer rate is 43.2%.
Holy cow.
So
really
half the
half
state
the population.
Almost. Yeah, and so of those volunteers, 65% of them are mobilized through religious institutions.
Oh, sure.
So they do it as part of service thing.
Yeah, that makes sense.
For Washington, it's not tied so much to religious organizations as it is just through like youth services or education services.
Yeah.
That's more like what we're volunteering
for
here.
Yeah, that makes more sense. I mean, Utah has a pretty huge Mormon population.
Exactly.
They probably, as a faith-based organization, value the idea of volunteerism. And then out here, which is a bit more, you know, not as connected to church.
Exactly.
You would have other organizations do it.
Yeah, and so volunteering through religious institutions in Utah is the biggest percentage statewide or nationwide for any other state. Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Way to go, Wisconsin. Nice job. We're always really good at stuff. So that those were our two interviews. I mean, it was really cool to hear from two completely different organizations, but who benefit from the same thing, which are volunteers.
Yeah.
In terms of our upcoming events, this is actually when it's starting for the CFT.
We're gonna
be in the thick of it here in about 2 weeks. One of the major things for our volunteers will be upcoming local coordinator trainings that will be going through most of August, some of September. Mm-hmm. For those of you listening from the Whatcom County area, August 2nd is the very first training. Kicks it all off.
Yeah, we'll be up there.
We'll be up there. And then we'll also, in the next week or so, for folks, you'll be able to order your supplies. So we have been getting posters and rack cards and different sort of kitschy items like coasters and lanyards. Yeah. Our volunteers are going to be able to order those so that they can promote giving within their offices using these materials. So those are two things concerning volunteers. For charities, one of the major things is we are doing filming at the moment for our charities. So we're going around to different states. We just filmed Alafia Foundation, and we filmed a really tiny, very cool animal shelter out in Raymond. So that was pretty neat. And then in terms of our donors and folks, we have our first sort of bigger event, which is the Mustache Dash. It's typically named Run CFD for those who have interacted with it before. It's on August 4th, 10 a.m., Capitol Lake. It benefits homeless backpacks. The shout out to the volunteers at the Department of Retirement Systems for putting that on.
Whoop, whoop.
Yeah. And then, of course, we'll have the Correctional Industries Golf Tournament, which benefits the Soup Ladies and the IF Project. That'll be on August 18th. August 11th is the ESD Softball Tournament. We're on a roll now. This stuff is all starting to happen.
Yeah,
so
it's going to be busy.
It's
busy
a very,
summer.
Yes, it's a very exciting time for us. This is personally when it gets going, and it's pretty fun.
Yeah.
So we hope to see at any of those particular events. Or trainings or whatever really interests you. So that's our show for this episode. We really appreciate everybody swinging in and listening to it, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.